All right, so we're back. My name is Vic Treadwell. I'm here with Tom Gilligan, and we're talking to James Williams about his experiences at Standing Rock.
Okay, so thanks, Vic. This is Tom Gilligan again. And James, why don't you continue with your story? And
okay.
I know there's other pieces we want to hear too. Thanks.
Okay, so when I came back from Standing Rock, again, that 35-hour bus trip back, it totally changed my life. The experience that I had out there totally changed my life, and I became, as I said before, I didn't pray, and since coming back from Standing Rock, I've been praying every day, many times a day in my own way. I came back with a renewed sense of purpose. As I told you, I went out there very depressed, thinking I was going to die, and I came back knowing that I had a new mission. I became a water protector, and that's kind of what I'm doing now as a result of Standing Rock. I'm going around to different places in the country as a veteran, and I'm putting up, I'm establishing veterans' presence at different camps, because what you should know is that even though Standing Rock camp has been cleared and raided by the police, all those thousands of people who were at Standing Rock are taking Standing Rock out into their communities, and they're taking them out, especially where there are pipelines, especially where there is fracking being done. Any place where dirty energy, where people are making money, putting money above water, clean water, as the profit motive above water, that there are camps, that people who were at Standing Rock are establishing camps. And if you want to see a list of the camps that I know of, there's a great website called waterislifemovement.com. And if you go to that website, you'll see all the camps that are existing. So I also got very involved with the Defund Apple movement. One of the things that I learned at Standing Rock was that the reason that this is able to take place is because banks, the major banks, are funding this operation. Citibank, Chase. Citibank is the largest contributor. They have over 400 and some million dollars invested in the pipeline at Standing Rock. All your major banks have big money invested. And the only reason that these pipelines are being built is because there are people out there who think they can make money from it, that they don't care that they are despoiling the water. They don't care that they are violating indigenous rights. The whole thing that happened at Standing Rock. Standing Rock, the people there, what we call the Sioux Nation, the Lakota and Dakota and Nakota people, they were there before we were. And I know that you said this is not a political show, but you have to understand the politics of what's involved in Standing Rock and what's going on in this country. You know, we in this country, we think of colonialism as something that happened somewhere else, that, oh, the Belgians went to Africa and they oppressed those people, and the British went to India and they oppressed those people. Well, guess what? The colonists, the American colonists,
James,
came here, and we did the same thing.
Because we're going to run out of time at some point. Yeah.
No, we got plenty of time. sorry to interrupt you there, James. We're trying to get our thing together here. I had a question for you too. Is this water protest movement?
Don't call it a protest, please.
I'm sorry.
The water protector movement.
The water protector movement. Thank you very much. Is this going on up in Canada too? Because I know that's the source of most of this oil that's coming through these pipelines, is up at the tar sands in Alberta.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening in Canada. I can't speak to what's happening in Canada, but you're right. You know, the pipeline very close to us here in New York is one called the Pilgrim Pipeline. I'm very involved in a camp in New Jersey called Split Rock Sweetwater Prayer Camp. And there's a pipeline, the pipeline that's going to go from New Jersey up to Albany, and it's taking that same Balkan shale oil, that dirty, horrible oil, and it's going to be running through those pipes. And that's happening all over the country, pipelines all over the country, but I can't speak to Canada. I don't know what's happening in Canada.
Right. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, that's okay. No problem.
Yeah. James, I wanted to ask you, too, that your organization, that they have gone out and they've been asked to come in and protect certain situations where people were being, you know, like a small family has a small plot of land.
Sure, I can talk about that.
Yeah, and things are being dumped on their land. Why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. Sure. Okay, so when I came back from Standing Rock, I maintained a website for all the New York veterans and New Jersey and the local veterans who went to New York, because we decided that we wanted to stay in touch with each other, and we knew that there was going to be further use for calls for us, because this is a very powerful movement that's happening in this country. Veterans are starting to put their lives on the line for many social issues and against a lot of the stuff that we're experiencing. There's a very powerful coalition of veterans, indigenous people, and water protectors and environmentalists that's happening all across the country. So I maintain this website, and there is a place up in Palenville, New York. There's a woman by the name of Stella Martin who lives up in Palenville, New York, and she lives next to a toxic dump site. And this site was supposedly a composting site. And what was happening over the course of the years is that, while she lived there, is that she would witness these big tractor trailers and dump trucks coming up, and they were dumping debris into this area that was supposed to be composting. And later on, they found out that a lot of the debris that was there was from Hurricane Sandy, from 9/11, and her family became very ill with cadmium poisoning. And she did some water testing. It was not official water testing that the government recognized. Somebody gave her strips that you put into the water that shows if there's cadmium in there. And the cadmium levels on the strip, it was off the stick. I mean, it was so intense. She began to speak up at local town meetings. She wanted this dump investigated because it was in the Catskill Wetlands, what's called the Catskill Wetlands. The Catskill Wetlands in New York are very, very important. They play a very crucial role in the ecosystem here in terms of the aquifers that feed New York City. So anything that happens in the Catskill Wetlands is going to ultimately affect the water supply of New York City. So when she started speaking up, instead of the people who were supposed to be protecting water were participating in a crusade against her, this woman started being harassed. The town started harassing her for housing violations. They went in and they claimed that she had certain things in her house that were done illegally, that she didn't have the proper kinds of permits, whatever she needed. And they said that she had to have a licensed architect come in and correct the violations, which she did. And I saw the documentation. These violations were corrected. The town, however, nevertheless condemned her house. They forced her to move out of property.
They condemned it on what grounds, James?
Did not correct the violations.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. She was code violations. They condemned the house not because of the water, not because of what her illness is, but because of the it was condemned because of violations.
Was she cleared up?
Yeah. Pardon?
She had cleared up the violations.
Well, according to the reports that I saw,
okay,
the town claims that they it was not done right.
Oh.
In any case, she was living there. She was a single parent living there with her two children. They had also become ill, and she ended up moving away from there. But she started she continued the fight, and she moved to this place. I think it's called South. Anyway, a place about 15 or 20 miles away from Palenville, and they told her that wherever she went, they were going to follow her and harass her. They didn't use the word harass her, but they were going to make her life miserable. So when she moved to this next place, she had things. People throughout the night were coming around her house. They were shooting rifle rounds close to her house. In one place that she's got this on video, they lit a fire very close to her house that had some kind of toxic kind of stuff that she said made them cough and started. They became ill from it, and they had to go into the house and close all the windows. So somebody told her, you know what, there are veterans who are going around who are protecting water, that you should put out a call to veterans. So she put out a call, and the first group that she contacted was a group out in Colorado called Veteran Power. The people from Veteran Power, they sent a woman down to help her out. I think she came down for a week or so to kind of figure out what was going on there and how they could help. They ultimately decided, they were based in Colorado, that they couldn't do it. But they knew me, so they contacted me and asked me, could I get some New York veterans involved? So I put out the call to New York veterans, and I first of all, three of us, the first trip I made up there, I went up there with three veterans, because when I started investigating what was happening up there, I began to talk to some local people up there who told me this woman was crazy, that there's no basis to what she's saying, that she has a personal vendetta against this dump owner, and that we shouldn't listen to her, that we don't know their side of the story. So I decided to go up and investigate first before we made a commitment, and I took a lawyer up with me. His name is Jesse Bueno. He went out to Standing Rock with me, and a vet by the name of Daryl Denning. So the three of us kind of went up there on a fact-finding mission to see what the heck was going on. And what we found, it was pretty horrifying what's going on up there. We actually spent the night at her house before we came back to New York, and we heard that same kind of stuff going off in the woods. We were hearing people tramping around in the woods in the middle of the night. We heard a few gunshots. The dogs were barking all night long. And so we decided that we had to do something. So we went up and we set up a veterans camp up there around her. And we flew our flag, the Veterans for Peace flag, and we made a really good presence there. We kicked it off on the 4th of July, and we enlisted. We had somebody that you should look up and see who he is, Dr. Wade Stone. I understand he was the scientist who uncovered Love Canal, the one who was responsible for making Love Canal happen, you know, alerting the public to Love Canal. And when he heard about what she was doing and what the issues were, he decided to come out of retirement to help fight this fight. So wow. There's some powerful allies that she has up there. Now, my group has since left that site because if we have time, I can tell you about the other site that we got involved in. But we left a couple of people in charge up there who are rotating people in and out. And I understand that ever since we set up there, that the harassment has lessened because we were conducting constant patrols at night. When we installed up there for her, we got a system of these security cameras, eight security cameras that have infrared vision. I think it's called infrared, night vision anyway. I looked at the quality, and you could see really see very clearly 80 feet into the woods at night, with the hope is that we were going to catch these people, who they are on video, and also to just document the kinds of stuff that she's suffering. But I understand that ever since the regular patrols have been occurring and people have been there in camp with her, that a lot of that harassment has stopped. And they're continuing their fight. What they're trying to do now is, as I understand it, to do these water testings properly, they cost many thousands of dollars to really get the kind of documentary evidence that you need to present that, yes, in fact, there is toxic poisoning happening. And I went up with two other veterans and one of our, the second time we went up there, and we took a walk around the Catskill Lake, around the wetlands. And there was a woman who lived right in the house next to where Stella used to live. She accompanied with us, and she was telling us that it used to be that you used to have all kind of fishermen out there in the wetlands fishing, and you don't see anybody out there anymore. They do not fish anymore. She said one day they went out there, and they saw thousands of fish belly up in the lake, dead.
Whoa.
There's no life in that lake anymore. We saw stuff in there that looked, I don't know what they were, but they looked like metal aluminum flakes all around the shoreline. And if you looked on the side, you could see like oil, residues from oil slick. And the two people that I was with, now I told you I have cancer and I'm being treated with radiation and stuff, so maybe it didn't affect me the way it affected them. But the first thing that they noticed after they were there for about 50 minutes, they said they tasted like they had blood in their mouth. And they started coughing and they became ill. And they had to get out of there. Now, not bragging, but I never get tired when I'm out there. I can go forever. All of a sudden, I just got so tired, I had to sit down. I just had to sit down. And we put two and two together. Wow. It must be from what's ever going on in the wetlands. So we really had to get out of there. We couldn't continue our investigation. Wow. So my understanding is what's happening up there now is that this woman has asked to have the Department of Environmental Conservation, which is New York's branch, to go in there and take water samples, and he's refusing to let them in. So they're trying to get a court order. They have an attorney net. So the last thing I heard from there is that they're trying to get a court order to go in and do testing. And the reason that this is important up in the Catskill Wetlands is you have to realize that illegal dumping has been going on for decades up there. Really? A lot of it was mafia, because there's a lot of money involved in taking stuff out of New York City and the metropolitan area and putting it up there in the Catskills, because up there people have no money, and this is a source of income for them. Everybody tells them, oh, this is safe, don't worry, this is safe dumping, this is safe dumping. And But the problem is, over the three or four decades that all this is happening, this stuff is starting to leach out of the Catskill wetlands, and it's starting to make its way downstream. Mm-hmm. And there's a town in Saugerties, again, they only had those tests. They only had those little strips. But there was they did a test on somebody who's get in, who gets a, it's a town, Saugerties is a little town downriver for them, and they had the same off-the-chart response to the cadmium poisoning.
Really?
And the town of Saugerties now is looking for an alternative site for their drinking water. They're currently getting it from some lake. And they're very hush-hush about it, but they're willing to spend a lot of money to find another drinking source, and they're telling people, oh, it's for a backup. We need a backup just in case. So I don't want to draw any conclusions from that, but I can tell you that a lot of people in the Catskills are getting sick, and that stuff is making its way downstream. And if it gets into the reservoirs that feed New York City, and you think Flint, Michigan was a big problem, if anything happens to the New York City water supply, it's going to be huge. So these are the kinds of things that I'm out there dealing with and protecting. I set up a second camp over in Mahwah, New Jersey right now, and that's another camp I can tell you about if we have time.
Mm. Yeah, we got a little more time. Let's hear about the Jersey site.
Okay, that's a really interesting one, and I'm really attached to this place because, first of all, it's an indigenous issue as well. There is a group of indigenous people called the Ramapo, and the Ramapo are part of the Lenape Indian tribe, American Indian tribe, who basically were the tribe that owned all this, who had all this land.
They don't own it. Is that down by the Pine Barrens?
They're in there too, yeah. New York, all, this whole area, New Jersey, Southern New York.
Yeah.
They do not consider that they own the land. The land owns them, but they resided on this land. So now they have, of course, now that we have property rights, they actually own property over there in New Jersey. This one particular site, a piece of land that they own, is in the middle of something called the Polo Club. And the Polo Club is an enclave of mansions and super wealthy people, one of whom is a financial advisor of Wells Fargo. And the Lenape people, the Ramapo people, when Standing Rock occurred, this piece of land that they owned, they decided that they were going to set up teepees in support of Standing Rock. This was back in October. So they set up teepees on their land, and they built a series of religious structures that they use in their prayer ceremonies. And they began to, they called the camp Split Rock Sweetwater Prayer Camp. And this is a place where they go to pray for water and to practice their religion. And because it's in the middle of this wealthy community, it's like a big eyesore to the people who don't want to see teepees. They don't want to see people in tents. They don't want to see people practicing their religious ceremonies, et cetera, et cetera. So the town of Mahwah is conducting a campaign against them to get them out of there. The first thing they tried to do, now you have to understand, this is 13 acres. This is beautiful acres that sit right along the Ramapo River. A lot of little lagoons in there, and a huge open site. And we're talking, this property is probably worth $10, $15 million. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a real estate person, but it's worth a lot of money. The town offered them $20,000 for it.
Okay.
That was the first step. Well, of course, they weren't going to sell because it's a prayer camp. They're there protesting. They're there protecting water and praying for water, and they're practicing their freedom of religion to practice their religion on this land. The camp is doing the same thing that they did to sell up. I mean, the town is doing the same thing. They're slapping them with spurious code violations. I just went over there the other day. They had a court case against them for the removal of their teepees. The town wants the teepees out, they said, because they're permanent structures. Think about that a second. Teepees are permanent structures. Teepees are for nomadic people. These teepees are easily taken down and moved. They are not permanent structures, but the town is finding them. I think it's some amazing amount of money. I think their fines are up to $40,000 now because they're refusing to remove the teepees.
Okay.
Because
how do they get in touch with you, Jim, or your organization?
How do you get in touch with
me?
Oh, okay.
How did you folks hear about it, get in touch with? How did it come to you?
How did that one come to me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was on my way up to the Catskills. And I got this call from two people who happened to be in that camp. This is another interesting group you should know about. There's something called, if you search for hashtag Unity Walkers, there's a group of people, Unity Walkers, Unity Drivers, and Unity something else. I can't remember what the other thing is. But the two people that I met at Split Rock, they contacted me because they wanted to go up to the Catskills with me, and they did. They went up and helped me set up the camp. So what these two people do, these two people are walking around. Everything that they own, they carry on their back. And they are walking from camp to camp, hitchhiking, walking, catching rides, however they can. They go all across the country to all these prayer camps in an effort to unite the camps and to get them to share resources.
You said the Unity Walkers?
Is that Unity Walkers. Yeah. Hashtag Unity Walkers. They're on, especially if you're on Facebook, they have a really lot of interesting information.
Okay.
And while they were over there, on, that's how I got in contact with this Split Rock site,
wow.
Is that they went up there with me, and then they came back. And as they were filling me into what was happening over there, because it's an issue that it combines both indigenous rights, constitutional rights, and water protecting rights, I immediately wanted to hop, you know, become connected. And it's a lot closer to home. It's a lot easier for me to be there than to be up in the Catskills. I got on the short line bus, and because I'm a senior citizen, I got a ticket for $5.85, and it takes an hour and 10 minutes to get there. So it's really pretty easy for me to get there. So that's pretty much what I've been doing.
Okay, that's great. James, thanks so much. It's a powerful story.
Can I just say, if anybody wants to get in contact, where to go? The website?
Okay, sure, please.
Okay, www.niany.com.
N as in Nancy, I, A as in Arthur?
Yeah. Nancy, Indigo, Arthur, Nancy, Yamaha, I guess, .com,
okay.
Forward slash, and then in capital letters, N as Nancy, W, Y, P, dot, and then in small letters, HTML. And that's my website, and you can see, especially go in and read all about what's happening in New Jersey and what the town, the corrupt town council is doing to them, and Robert, and Wells Fargo, because Wells Fargo is involved in this also.
Mm-hmm.
You'll
after
see
the
all
forward
the information
slash,
on there.
It's capital letters, N as in Nancy, W as in water, Y as in yellow, P as in Peter?
Think of it as New York Water Protectors.
Okay.
New, N,
N-Y.
WP.
Okay,
but those are capital letters,
okay.
And then the small letters are .html.
And then .html.
By the way, I used to live in Maine. I lived up there for 3 years.
Yeah,
and I used to be in the, I was in Moose Produce, and I delivered produce to all
you
the co-ops.
And
Belfast Co-op
guy.
Was the best. Belfast Co-op
was. Yeah. Who would have thought our lives would converge in so many ways, and I think that's more true than we thought. And it's more than a wonderful story. It's inspirational in terms of courage and the connection we have between us. And folks, in the meantime, what's the phone number here, Vic? 207?
207-338-2277.
We'd like to put some other stories on, too. They don't have to be, it could be the first time you went ice fishing or anything like that, the ice storm. We want other stories that people can find out, questions that they probably always wondered about. So, okay, thanks for listening. That's about it, right, Vic? Thanks.
Yeah. So you've been listening to James Williams discussing his works with water protection, and Tom Gilligan has been doing the interview. And we're going to take you back to Ratchet the Robot and music. Thanks for listening.